This is a HeadGum Podcast.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Cheryl Hines.
Tignotaro.
Oh,
did I say
my
it right?
God. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Mm. It's taken 15 long years. Today's our 15th anniversary.
And boy, do we have a...
How are we going to celebrate? I know how we will.
Celebrate. We're going to do a podcast that's going to knock your socks off.
Yeah. Happy anniversary.
It's not it would really be weird if we knew the exact date that we met.
I probably could find it because I have an archive of shows on my website and we
that
met at the Improv.
That would be cute.
Yeah. I'll find it.
Tig, today we talk about the 90s, making out with the people like Charlie Sheen.
Not just the 90s, but a very different version of the 90s than I had. I'll tell you that much.
Same. Yeah.
That is not at all what I was up to.
You weren't hanging out with Michael Jackson and Bubbles?
No. I was listening to the Indigo Girls.
Yeah.
And I think I was in Denver. I was in Austin.
But anyway, today we have a very special guest on.
Mm-hmm.
And she, she is going to tell us a lot about her experiences, if you will.
Even if you won't.
Okay. Everybody, germs and ladies, that's definitely not how it goes. Ladies and germs, ladies and gents, ladies and jerks, please welcome to Kid 90.
It all started when Tig and Cheryl met in the mid-2000s.
Hey, nice to meet you, Tig. I'm Cheryl Hines.
Hi, Cheryl. I'm Tig Notaro. Should we do a podcast about documentaries?
Yes.
A podcast about documentaries?
Is this microphone on?
Five furious frogs fiddling faintly. Furious frogs fiddling faintly. Fry Fury Frog
Seedling. I am the first ever podcast, and Tig and Cheryl are following in the sound of my footsteps.
Let's get started.
I'm so ready.
Tig and Cheryl.
True story. Tig.
Cheryl. It's me, Tig.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well. If anybody cares, I'm in Toronto.
I don't think they care. Hey, Tig, guess where I am? It's where I'm from.
Is it near Florida?
I'm in Florida.
You're at Cracky's
house.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in the corner.
Okay.
But listen, we have a really fun episode. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know.
We have a special guest.
We do.
Who's like,
we do.
She's laughing already. Should we introduce the documentary first or should we introduce our guest?
Let's introduce the documentary first.
So today we're talking about Kid 90.
Mm-hmm.
Kid 90 is a 2021 documentary film directed and produced by Soleil Moon Frye. Soleil achieved fame at age 7 when she played the titular character on the NBC sitcom Punky Brewster. Oh my God, we have so much to talk about. In the 90s, Soleil began carrying a video camera with her and extensively documenting her teenage years. The documentary is the first time Soleil has reviewed the tapes, which are intercut with present-day interviews with many of her friends from that time. Kid 90 is available to watch now on Hulu.
Soleil, welcome to the show.
I am so honored to be here with you guys. This is going to be great.
Do not speak too soon.
Okay.
Now, so like, can I tell you something that
you can
I
tell me anything, please?
I can't possibly get started on this show without explaining this to you. I used to be part of a podcast almost 10 years ago. And we used to talk about science and outer space and things like this. What?
I love science and outer space. So
okay, I can't wait till you find out what I'm about to tell you. At the end of every, and I'm sorry, Cheryl, but you know, we don't stay on track, and so, and you have no idea what I'm about to say either, right, Cheryl?
No, I'm getting nervous.
Well, it has something to do with Soleil.
Okay.
It has a lot to do with Soleil.
Like, I'm getting more and more excited by the moment.
Okay. So me and a couple of comedian friends of mine, we were one of the early podcasts, and we used to end our podcast with different games and fun little things to do. And one of the games that became our signature way to end each episode was called Name That Punky. And our fan base went nuts over this game. And basically what it was one of the hosts would talk like the guy, the
George Gaines.
Yes, yeah. George Gaines on so your show.
They would do Henry.
Yeah, yeah.
Why didn't you call me to come do Punky? Because I would have like reenacted it for you.
Here's the thing is we didn't, this is what the game was my co-host would say something in George, that's his name?
Yeah, in Henry. Yeah. George Henry.
Okay, this elderly man. In his voice, he would imitate him saying something to Punky. Like he would say, oh, Punky. And then me and the other co-host would have to guess what he was saying, oh, Punky, about.
Oh, that is amazing. Yes.
Okay. And then we would have three, which was originally supposed to be Punky coins that we could...
You would win? Is that what you would win?
No, we'd gamble a punky coin.
Oh my god.
And then
this is amazing.
No, this is horrifying. And
Cheryl, incredible. Pipe down. So we would wager punky coins, and then one time I accidentally called them punky corns. Uh-oh. And then it became very popular on the show to wager punky corns. Oh my god. And we would name that Punky. And that's how we ended our show for years. And we started doing a live tour, and people would go crazy when we would end our live shows with Name That Punky, and people would bring Punky coins.
Are you serious?
They'd bring homemade Punky corn that they would wager.
This is incredible.
Yes.
This is amazing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is, I think, part of the issue. Like, a Punky Brewster, my God. I mean, how long ago was that? And this is still, like, she's still, Soleil is still, I mean, people look at you and go, hey Punky Brewster.
Well, I'm like, what the thing is, and I really do mean this, that... So Punky, I love Punky so much. Like, and there's also, by the way,
yeah,
there's like
no one.
There's no one that like loves her more. Like, literally, when I tell you that, like, I dressed up for like as her for years, just like to make my friends laugh. Like, if they were all stoned at night, I would be like, "Hold on a second, I had a great party game." Like, I am completely embracing of the Punky, so much so that like we did the continuation and, you know, brought it back, and so
you're not mad at me for doing Name
this
That
this
Punky
literally
for years.
Is this has made my entire week.
Wow.
Legitimately, because I have so much love for Punky, so when there is love or humor around it, it just makes me really happy.
And when I was in junior high school, I had a shirt that my mother got me where one side was one color, the other side that you buttoned together was another color. One sleeve was another color, another sleeve was another color, And my mother called it my Punky yes. Brewster shirt. Because you were all
We should
funky,
all
punky.
Have a Punky Brewster shirt. Punky is like my inner superhero, like my little action figure.
But I know you're more yes. than that. I know that you're a more yes, layered, dynamic Tig. Person
That's
than just
right. That's
punky.
What I'm
Cheryl, I don't need to be reprimanded
yeah, no,
on my
you
own.
Do.
I do
I think
not.
You do. I think I wish I could see you privately in the kitchen for okay. 1 second so I can talk to you. Well, but we're in different countries. So, Soleil, this documentary, okay, you, like we have talked about, you played Punky Brewster. For how many years were you on that?
We shot it for 4 years. So we did 88 episodes and did it.
That's my favorite number.
Okay, first of all, 8 is my number, 88 is my number, and 888 is also mine. I'm all about 8s.
Oh, I am. Okay. I feel nothing for 1-8. Okay. I feel nothing for 3-8s. But
okay.
2-8s,
well,
you got me.
I mean, if I showed you in my phone the amount of 8? Double 8s. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Like, I mean.
Why do you wait?
I mean,
wait, what does that okay. mean?
Cheryl, well, stay out of it. I've made a new friend.
Why does he have a lot of, how would you have a lot of 8s on your phone?
Because I am all about signs and double
like signs
eight, and
the
so
universe come
from
through,
signs from the
come
universe
through
and
to you
yes, eight. Like and numbers and
oh
yeah,
my God.
And eights.
Oh,
are,
you have so much to talk.
Are very
look at me showing up 88
I mean,
favorite number and come, used to end my
I mean,
show with name that
and then,
I mean,
and then your Punky Brewster
we
shirt.
Are, yes, I'm.
And I had a Punky Brewster shirt. Daughter?
She's like, why in your phone are there 8? I'm not even kidding. Like I literally. Love 8.
Love 8.
That yes.
So you were
me and you kid. Me and you kid.
So you started the show when you were 7.
Yes. I think I was like 6 when we did the pilot, but yeah, 6, 7, like crazy little.
I mean, that's so crazy to me. Can you imagine, Tig, when your boys are a few years older that they become a huge TV star? You know, where they
can't even imagine them being a medium TV star.
When they're 7 and someone says, get up and go to work, and they mm-hmm. get up and take a shower and are on the set. And,
do you know, 4-year-olds get up and take showers?
I'm saying 7.
So, like, how many kids do you have?
4.
You have 4 kids.
That's yeah. a lot.
It's a lot.
You're
it's
jumping
lot.
Ahead. Tig is jumping ahead.
A lot. One's almost 16. One's 13 going on 30. One's 7 and one's almost 5 in a week.
Oh, my. Are they and entertainers? Are they like professional, get up and take a shower entertainers?
Here's the thing. They're all so unique. Poet, my oldest, is so amazing. She's
your child's
oldest
name,
name
is Poet?
Poet?
Yeah.
Nice.
She's an advocate. She's amazing. Mm. She loves psychology. She's just amazingly brilliant and incredible, a beautiful writer. Jagger is amazing. She's a total entertainer. She's like so focused. Like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to move to New York. I'm going to do. You know, she's very committed to acting. And I'm like, if she's anything like I was, obviously there's no stopping her because I begged my mom. I was like, I want to do this so much.
So you haven't stopped her. She's acting or she?
She is. She's also really focused on her education. So a big thing for me is that, yes, I am supportive, also want to make sure that she follows through on her education and having things outside of that that she loves. And of course she wants it like yesterday. She's so determined. Yeah. And so now she was like, okay, fine, I'll just write my own scripts. And literally over quarantine, my daughter, who was 12, wrote like a really great screenplay. And I'm like, all right, well, go you. She's like, if you're not going to make it happen, you know, like faster, I'm going to make it happen faster.
I like this. Get up and
very
go.
Determined. And then my 7-year-old's an incredible artist and so funny. I mean, just full on stand. I mean, you guys, like, he's ready to get out and do stand up.
I'm a stand up comedian.
Oh, boy. I mean, can I introduce you to my 7-year-old? Because
I need an opening act in the new year when I go on tour.
Great. He comes up with some really funny ones.
Somebody needs to between the two of us.
And then the 5-year-old's like into rock climbing. So I feel like he's going to be like, he'll just climb on anything. It's terrifying.
I wonder if he'll be one of those, what is that thing where you like
solo. Run? Like I feel like, oh, well, I feel like he's going to be like jumping from
Well, that's what I mean. Like, well, through the city, how people do that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Whatever that thing is called. They do
backflips. Parkour, right?
Yeah.
Tig, yeah. We've got to tell people.
Okay, let's talk about the documentary.
Jeez. So Soleil started documenting?
Basically.
Started documenting her teen years, and then you never looked at this footage until you decided to make this film.
Not once. Not a peek.
So I had locked away the tapes, yes, for over 20 years.
And not a peek.
No, a few times I tried to peek. Oh, no, mainly the diaries. Like every once in a while, I would like peek into one of the diaries.
Yeah.
And I had them all locked away in these Tupperware containers for like over 20 years.
Tupperware.
It's so crazy. Yeah, I had Tupperware. Fresh.
Well, it was the 80s.
Just tapes. I mean, it was
the 90s.
Crazy. Oh, it was the 90s, right.
The 90s. Well, like late 80s and the 90s. Yeah.
See, I mean, it was in the 80s.
Have you guys seen the doc yet?
Yes. This is what's ridiculous about our show. We see the docs, but somehow we never seem to talk about them on this podcast. Yeah. But yes, we
saw the doc, but that's why you're here.
No, I was just making sure. No, I know.
Yeah, no, it's a fair question.
Do you think it's a coincidence that we have a documentary podcast?
And we have you on.
And we have you
on?
I got to tell her about punky corns? Which I'm so glad that I was able to tell you.
I knew you had seen it, but I just wondered for a moment.
Oh, my gosh. Fully saw it. So you peeked, and did you – there has to be stuff that you looked at and you were like, there's no way.
Yeah, so basically I realize now that it was very much a subconscious thing because I turned 40 and I had a lot of questions about, like, did things happen the way that I remembered them? And I was starting to feel, you know, I had this beautiful family and I started to wonder, who am I in addition to this family? And I realize now that on a subconscious level, I started opening up the tapes for that reason. I did not realize what was on the tapes. I didn't know what was on the tapes. I didn't know what was in the diaries. And I think I just locked it away because ultimately there was so much love and joy, and there was also a great deal of pain. And so, yeah, I really hadn't watched them. I hadn't looked at them. I hadn't really peeked at them. I was tempted to. And if I ever did, you know, for a second, I'd be like, oh, I think I just wasn't ready. I think I must have known on a subconscious level that there was just so much in there. And then when we started the doc, like my plan was to make it about everyone but me. Mm-hmm. And so I tried so hard to make it about everyone else. And then as the onion peeled back more and more and more, it just became this more and more personal journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, because it was literally through your lens. Do you see what I'm saying, Tig? I'm talking about filmmaking and also about life. You can see it through a camera lens, but also through your own eyeballs and how you see things, Tig.
But then also people, you know, were filming you. There were times it wasn't through your lens. Other people, is that something where you were like, hey, film me, or somebody would grab your camera?
No, people would pick up the camera. And I think at the time, because there wasn't really, nobody was using these video cameras, you know, we didn't have social media or phones. Right. And so it was kind of like a novelty where people would be like, oh, what is this thing?
Oh, I know. It was really fun to see people so excited to see a video camera and to look through it and to be like, whoa.
You would look so dumb. If you were going to parties now with a video camera, people would be like,
on your shoulder,
who invited this nerd? Take your video camera.
Oh my God.
And scram clown.
Well, scram clown. That is so funny. Literally, so you guys, a week ago, my stepdad, this is so crazy, sends me a picture, and somehow it's like, literally, I feel like I'm in a movie inside of a movie. I'm like, would you even write this? Literally, my mom and stepdad live like hours away, and we moved out of my childhood home many years ago. And he finds another box of tapes, you guys.
Oh, my God.
Like, and one of them says Canada. So I'm really curious what's on the Canada tape. I'm curious what's on all the tapes. So yesterday for Mother's Day, they bring it over. Sequel. And there's these mix tapes. And so I'm like,
we've got to get a tape player. So I go to the kids. I'm like, where is the Walkman that I got you at the beginning of quarantine? So we're running around the house last night trying to find the, like, Walkman.
A way to play. Are they cassettes?
Because I was like, they're cassettes. They're like mixtapes, right? And I'm like, I've got to hear these. So we're running around the house trying to find this Walkman that I got them that I was like, oh, I'm going to be so cool to like teach them what a Walkman is. They bring it up and I'm like, trying to play it, and I'm like, where's the charger? And I'm like, oh, can I cuss? Oh, fuck. Yeah. These don't take a charger. So then I'm like, AA batteries, but the batteries, like, don't work anymore. And it was so funny because I feel like I live, like, time has just folded over, and I live between this, like, wormhole of, like, space time.
Decades.
I remember when I, you know, not to go off track here, but I remember that when my godmother brought a Walkman over to our house, I was just like, I'm sorry. You're saying I can walk around and listen to music?
Yes.
The first time I saw an iPod.
That's more recent.
No, but it was crazy because
we're talking about like the wheel.
Peter Gallagher. We were on a plane and he shows me like the little tiny, you know, iPod, and he said there are over 1,000 songs on this, and I was like, that's not possible. And he's like, Cheryl, I'm telling you, in this little machine, you can put any song you want and listen to it. And I was like, what? That's crazy, Peter Gallagher.
Right?
The iPod that I had was like an inch thick.
Yeah, this was
5 inches long. And I still had it until about 7 years ago. And I remember people were making fun of me because they were like, oh, they've gotten a lot smaller, Tig.
I'm such a hoarder. I still have all of them.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's so funny you said that, because I remember giving birth to my first kid. And literally, it was this big, right? This thick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, like an inch wide or something. Yeah. And I was
button.
Yes. Yeah. And I had that same feeling that you guys did, which is like, what? I can have like thousands of songs on my like delivery playlist? Like, this is crazy.
It's like magic. Okay, listen, you guys, let's get back to the doc.
Before we get back to it.
Yes.
Talking about your hip, cool, space-aged video camera.
Yes.
Let us not forget. And I dated somebody that had one of these, okay? Let us not forget the video camera that had the actual VHS slot that you open and slide an entire VHS tape into. And then close that door. And then you walk around with basically, six bricks on your shoulder? And people
heavy.
Are like, oh my God, did a spaceship just land? This is so
high tech.
Yeah, it's so high tech. I'm still getting used to my Walkman just walk around town with a
cassette
tape.
You don't have to be plugged into anything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS, or play online via Facebook games.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car.
That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
So I think it's fair to say that this documentary, you started recording things way after Punky Brewster was over.
Yeah.
But by the way, when Punky Brewster was at its height, you're meeting Nancy Reagan and Johnny Depp and Michael Jackson's
monkey.
Gee, I have a crazy Michael Jackson story at some point.
You'd be the first.
I would like to hear it.
So I went to Bruce Springsteen. Love Bruce Springsteen. Concert.
Same.
Love. And we went, and he and Elizabeth Taylor were there, and I gave him this, like, yeah. And we were, like, in a box. I had a friend who knew him. It was crazy. This is, like, the height of punky, right? Wildness.
Wait, how old were you?
I was,
like, eight.
Eight or nine. Okay. And then he had...
God, it was the height of punky, Cheryl. No more stupid questions.
I gave him a yo-yo, and he was, like, playing with it under the table.
Wait, Michael or the monkey?
Yeah. Michael.
Is that code or something?
And then Elizabeth Taylor had this gigantic ring that I thought was out of a 25-cent machine because I had never seen a ring so big. Like, I thought it was, like, one of those, like, pretend, you know. And then, a week later, I went to his house. And you guys, I was supposed to be with a group of people, and the group of people left. And I ended up in a jacuzzi with Michael Jackson.
All of the words you just said are intense. First of all, you were... at a concert in a box. Was your mom there?
My mom was there, yeah.
Okay, so you guys were hanging out with Michael and
How
Elizabeth.
How do you end up in a hot tub with Michael? I have not.
I told you, I can blow your minds, you guys, on the tangents that I can go off on.
Okay, but did he invite you when you were in the box? Was he like, you got to come over to my house?
Yeah, and I had friends in college. Like, I knew I had a friend whose family was working with him. And so, like, a week later, I get invited over there, and there's a group of people. And first of all, we watch Willy Wonka. He has Willy Wonka, like, in the chocolate factory in a movie theater. And did not expect this to go down the Michael Jackson route. Although
we welcome it.
It's so fascinating, right?
But we have to just immediately jump to, did you find him weird or inappropriate or?
I mean, looking back, I think I still am putting together the pieces. It's like, it is all, the whole thing is so surreal. At the time, I didn't think it was as crazy, and it definitely, in retrospect, like, is pretty fascinating.
Sure. And so you get an invitation. What do you talk to Michael Jackson about in a hot tub as an eight-year-old?
So I felt like it was a very adult conversation. Like, we had a very – by the way, my mom had no clue. My mom thought I was there with, like, a group of friends. The friends started to, like, leave. And so my mom didn't know that I was actually there with Michael alone.
Somebody had to drive you there.
Oh, she did. But when my mom and I went there, there was a household full of people.
Mm.
So she thought, like, and there was adults and kids, you know what I mean? It wasn't like she was like, oh, I'm
And
I'm
then when she came
alone.
To get you.
And then when she came to get me, she was like, what is going on? Where is everybody?
We're over here
in the hot tub.
We're in the arcade.
With bubbles. With bubbles.
I'm the monkey.
I'm not sure if I even told my mom at the time. I mean, really, it is wild.
I'm sure you found yourself in a lot of situations where, first of all, a kid would never be normally. And then when you became a teenager, when you're watching this film, it looks like, I mean, it seemed like you guys didn't have a care in the world, and you were just all sort of hanging out and
doing drugs. Can I say that,
Cheryl? People heard that.
Literally, one of my favorite scenes is the mushrooms, or the moments. One of the highlights in my life was us in the poppy fields. That was very funny. Here's the thing. No, in all honesty, like we were very innocent for so much of our like youth, and we did have our innocence. And I can speak for myself at least. You know, we would go to amusement parks and play and hang out. And my house was kind of like summer camp, and everybody was there. And my mom would cook these.
Yeah, your house seemed fun, and your mom seemed cool.
It was like our real life eighth grade. You know, we just there was a very small group of us that were all really, really close and had very authentic friendships. And we would go to school and just hang out and dance around and hang out in parking lots and laugh. And then certainly, like, once we got to a certain age where some kids experiment, like, I started experimenting a little bit. And when I tell you, like, I think that was one of the only time, I mean, I've maybe done them like a few times in my entire life. That happened to be one of them. I just happened to have a video camera. So whereas—
I know, that's so crazy.
That you did mushrooms.
Yeah. And literally for me, it was just, I was documenting everything. So yeah, we would get, we'd go out and, you know,
and you hung out in parking lots.
Yeah. Like the Formosa Cafe, we would like go hang out in the parking lot. And we were just having so much fun. And I think the thing is, I think so many of the things we did are things that people do all over the place, right? Like they experiment with drinking and this and that. And you know what I mean?
I was telling my wife that when I was a kid, we used to go hang out in a parking lot at the grocery store. And she was like, who hangs out at a parking lot? What were you doing
in a parking
lot?
Oh, we would listen to music and like blast the music and just like run around the car. Yeah.
Yeah. We'd sit on the hood of the car, listen to music. And Stephanie was like, no. Yes. Who on earth? I can't wait till she finds out Soleil.
And the thing that's been so amazing about the response is to see that, to your point about how we make something through our own lens, my dream was that other people would be able to view it through their own lens. And to hear these shared experiences from other people has been so amazing because, like, this was just us growing up. And yeah, there was like the partying that I like experimented or, you know, things like that. But really, there was also a great deal of innocence. And I know it sounds crazy coming off of Michael Jackson to a great deal of innocence. It was a very surreal world. And yet there was a lot of grounding in my home of, you know, of a really amazing dynamic family.
Have your kids
friends.
Seen the documentary?
My daughters, yeah. They've. I mean, my oldest filmed quite a bit of the like when I was reading my diaries and things like that, and they've been so supportive. And I think so much of me getting to a place of being able to share it and come to terms with so much of my experiences was also having daughters that were coming of age as well. And you know how so many people are like, oh no, I've experienced it. You know, when you tell your kids and. They're like, yeah, right. And I'm like, no. I really went through
some of my documentary.
I'm like, watch this.
But it's opened up a line of communication for us. And I'm not saying that everybody parents this way or that it works for everyone. For us, it's created an honest conversation. And I think for me, that's really important that I can have that and talk to them and that I hope they feel like they talk to me.
I mean, it's pretty amazing that you have so much footage. I mean, that's why this film is standing out to people, and just the idea that you were, what's the word, I don't know, aware enough at the time to know that this was going to be, it would somehow be important later for you, or maybe at the time you were just doing it for entertainment. I mean, at the time, would you go back and watch the footage, or was it just, you were just shooting stuff, and then you put it away?
It was very much the teen journalist in me, and I really every once in a while would look at a tape, but really I was just documenting it and then putting it away. And I really do believe we come into this life with that soul purpose inside that is just so innate in our inner being, and that there was this part of me that just wanted to it was that spark inside.
Were you at all into documentaries?
I love documentaries, yeah.
When you were a kid?
When I was a kid, I was super into journalism. I think more than anything, I was fascinated by people. And I loved the colorful world of people. Mm-hmm. My dad was a civil rights activist. My mom was an activist. I was taught at an early age that you take pain, you turn it into art. And I loved I was always like the 5-year-old asking the taxi driver about, like, you know, what their life story was. So I think it was that I just was fascinated by the world around me, mm-hmm. and colorful people and stories, and that we each have our story. And I wanted to know as much as I could about people's stories.
In this film, and part of your story that I found really interesting, it's interesting and heartbreaking and fascinating. So you were the cute little girl, huge star, and everybody thought of you as this little sweet, fun girl, and then you started developing.
Yeah.
So you started getting
yes,
some larger breasts, yeah, shall we say,
well, at, yeah, an that's early what it was. Age.
Well, I know, but it's delicate.
I'm so down to talk about it. I went from like a little, you know, just this little girl to like a triple D E in like a matter of a few years, and it was so fast. My development happened so fast.
That had to be strange.
It was so strange because
suddenly people are looking at you, yeah, completely, totally differently. Yeah.
And there's the objectification and all of that that I felt, and not to mention like my back pain and, you know, my insecurities and, you know, bending over and just
try to make them look smaller.
And everywhere I would go, people would be like punky Hooters or perky, you know, like punky Boobster, and for me, I know I certainly developed insecurities around it. And then I was like, I want to do this thing that's going to help myself and help others, and that's when I decided to do my breast reduction.
And how old were you then? Because
I was 15.
See, that's so crazy. So,
and it's so wild. And what I think, Cheryl, what I think is so fascinating about it too, is the way that this is so timeless. Because I look at my daughters, and they are so developed as well. And I think about how much it is magnetized now with social media,
right.
And I see so many of the same things happening to them, yet it's magnified times a million. And I wonder, what are the long-term effects on young people today? Because we are treating them the same way, and yet now there's cyberbullying, there's this, there's that. I mean, there's so much to it.
To be 15... and to make that kind of decision that's going to, you know, that you live with for the rest of your life, after you had your breast reduction, did you ever, you know, I don't know, when you're 30, say, oh, what did I do? How could I have done that when I was that age? Or
no, I'm so grateful. I mean, I remember not being able to, you know, I'd want to go horseback riding, you know, or have an experience, like go roller skating with my friends or just anything. And my back was in so much pain. My shoulders had indention. Like, I mean, it was really hard. And I love being voluptuous. I'm totally comfortable being voluptuous. I love it. I am down with it. It was just that the back pain and all of that, it made it so hard to...
And how did you decide on... And listen, you don't have to answer any of these questions.
I'll answer anything.
But how did you decide on the size? I mean, when you're 13 and you develop so quickly, and then when you're 15 and you say, oh, I'm going to get breast reduction.
And I didn't know if they were going to grow back. Like, I didn't know if they would continue growing.
They do,
keep
don't
growing.
They?
Keep growing. I mean, for a while, right? So...
I had a very different experience.
I love being voluptuous, so I wanted to stay voluptuous.
Mm-hmm.
It was more the back pain and everything else, so that was how I decided, was I wanted to still stay voluptuous, knowing that I could potentially grow a little more. Mm. So I chose on a C. I mean, I'm way oversharing here. I hope you guys are okay with
that's
this.
That's all we do on I this chose show, whether people want to hear it or not.
A full C cup, because I felt like if I went up to a D, I'd be cool, which I have, like, since then gone back and forth.
Well,
and
that
was how I chose.
Okay.
See, I had whatever the smallest size is, and then... You know, thanks to cancer, I had both of them removed and tossed, I'm assuming, into a dumpster in an alley in Hollywood somewhere.
Tig, that's what? So Tig, dark I'm and so sad. Sorry. Like the surgeon went out to the dumpster
just
and
like flicked them, just toss them out of a window into a dumpster, and there's rodents fighting over them.
No, don't.
But I have to say, after my double mastectomy, I don't know if anyone even noticed. I don't know if anyone was like, oh, they're gone, those things.
But Ben, that's a question too. Like, do you ever look back and think, oh, maybe I should have done reconstructive surgery? Well, I guess
me?
You still could. Yeah.
No, when I was in the middle of it all and I was going to see different surgeons and they were like, oh, you know, because I had to talk to different surgeons, different reconstructive surgeons, different oncologists. It was all happening so fast. And every time I was meeting with somebody, it was like, we'll just, take some fat out of this and move this here and then cut that off and move. And I was just sitting in every meeting with a surgeon thinking, I can't even imagine. I can't imagine. I mean, I didn't feel attached enough to my chest to have other parts of my body removed and you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I felt attached to my body. I think that was the crazy part was when they said I had to have a double mastectomy. I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I haven't really thought enough about my body to realize like I like my body. I don't want it to change.
Yeah.
And so it was the scariest feel. Yeah. I remember in my head when I was being rolled on the gurney down the hallway to surgery, I remember just in my mind picturing my hands just dragging along the walls of the hallway, even though they weren't, just in my mind, I did not want to have this surgery. I didn't want my body to change.
Yeah.
And then when I came out of surgery and went through recovery, I kind of felt, I felt 8 years old again because my chest was completely flat. And it was a weird thing to feel like a child again.
Like you reversed.
Yeah, it ended up being a positive in that, I don't know.
I think what you are saying is so empowering and incredible, and I spent a great deal of time thinking about our perspectives of ourselves, and that feeling, because so much of this experience was an experience of really discovering self-love, and the fact that you were so strong and came out of it and recognized that is so beautiful. And I look at so many peers, you know, and their view or sense of themselves. And I look at beautiful women with beautiful bodies that do, I can only speak for myself. Like I'm not saying I would never do anything, but I look at them and they're doing so many things to try to fix these parts of themselves that are so not broken. Like I look at it, you know what I mean? And I'm like, you are so beautiful. Like you have the greatest this or that. And I'm like, and it's just so fascinating because it's like, we have to see it in ourselves. Like I look at my scars and I'll be like, oh, should I do? And then I'm like, that's part of my character. It's part of like what makes me who I am. These are some of the best parts of me because they each hold a story, you know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I always tell people that, you know, when I because I did a stand-up special with my shirt off a few years
ago.
Amazing. And I remember the point I had come to was because I kept feeling compelled, like, oh, I want to go on stage and do my stand-up with my shirt off and not even talk about it. I felt so compelled because I knew it would make people uncomfortable and laugh, and especially if I just talked about, like, airplane
normal
food.
Jokes.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, I have to do this. So I did it for my HBO special. And people were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know, that you're going to do that. But what came over me was scars are proof that I healed. Mm-hmm. And so that was this realization that I had of like, oh, I don't feel scarred. I feel like, oh, I have proof that I've healed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was empowering to me.
I love that. I'm getting teary-eyed.
You guys, I don't mean to switch gears. Well, I do mean to switch gears.
Oh, you want to talk about the documentary?
Yeah, this is the problem, Soleil. I'm the only person on here who tries to.
As I'm crying over here.
Yes. So can we just talk about Charlie Sheen for a second?
Sure.
Because
oh, you did watch it. I'm just kidding.
Yes. You hung out with famous people, and that's what's fun about the.
I love out of all the people. Let's talk about Charlie.
Let's talk. Well, I mean, because by the way, at the time, Charlie Sheen was like,
at the time, right? I mean, at the time.
Tig. Oh,
I missed that.
What?
I didn't know. I never knew the name.
Oh, Charlie Sheen?
Like, do you remember Platoon days? Yes. I mean, like, literally, I mean, I had, like,
I was John Travolta. I was Eddie Van Halen. Oh, I was not Charlie Sheen.
Oh, wow. Well, some of us were. Am I right, Soleil?
I saw him in movies, but I was just like, oh, I can see there's a person there. That's how it felt.
Oh, my God.
There he is.
You didn't look at him and go, hey, I could get down with the Charlie Sheen.
No.
You looked at John Travolta and said, hey, I could get down with the John Travolta.
Sandy!
Please.
My favorite. By the way, my daughter just got an original Grease album yesterday.
Oh my God, I loved Grease so much.
Oh, nice.
So, I love Grease too, also secretly. Oh. So, I mean, not even secretly.
Secret's out. Secret.
Cool Rider.
Is
I mean,
that with the.
Twitter is ablaze.
I mean, I want to see OOL. I mean, like,
I didn't see Grease too. John Travolta wasn't in it, right?
No.
Yeah, I had no business.
Michelle Pfeiffer, right?
You might as well put Charlie Sheen in there. Like, that's, you know. Like,
oh, no, it was Maxwell Caulfield.
Oh, okay. We'll just have to believe you.
So you were hanging out with people like Mario Lopez, and how did you connect with Charlie Sheen?
Wait, that's the end of the list?
Well,
with Mario Lopez.
I'm like, Mark McGrath.
That's it?
Sarah Gilbert. These people are in the... the film. But so you are how old? And then
I'm 50.
Did he remind our listeners how this came to be?
Okay. I had known him for a long time. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was 18.
Okay. Oh, all right.
I was 18 in Florida. I was 18 in Florida.
Oh, wow. You can do anything when you're 18.
There was a Planet Hollywood opening.
Uh-oh.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello. Go on. We're salivating.
I might have been the one that even, like, I might have been more the initiator in this situation, is way more information than...
No, this is what we're here for. It's just us.
Yeah.
You know what
we're
I think,
we're not releasing
though,
this episode.
Is to be
we're going to put it in a time capsule.
And again, I can only speak to my experience, right?
Okay, that's all
I had experiences before that, you know, that were conflicting for me, that were... painful for me to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I think this is kind of one of those things where for me, in a way, it was in wanting to own my own story, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. wanting to write something.
Take charge.
And again, it was a very different time. And I had a crush on him for a long time. And so I can only speak to my experience, which was that with me, he was very sweet. And
okay. Are you still in touch with him?
You know, it's sweet. He actually, over the years, has reached out a number of times when really amazing things have happened throughout my life, and mm-hmm. was incredibly generous towards the charity work that I've done. He has reached out at different times and just said that he's really happy for me, and
he's
been very kind. And also before the documentary. So I mean, before the documentary came out. So he's just always treated me kindly. And it's funny because the diaries, when I read them back, were way more loving than even I had remembered them to be, you know, because in our teen minds, if we don't talk to somebody for a few weeks, it feels like months, or months feels like years. And when I go back through them.
And does he know that he's in this documentary?
Have
you heard from him since?
I have not directly spoken to him since the documentary came out. Although he has said very kind things about me publicly, and that he's very happy for me with the doc.
That's nice.
Well, I'm glad that he was nice to you. I'll tell you what. I was at the Comedy Central roast I think, for Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
Right? They roasted him.
I don't know, but I believe you.
Yeah. I was there.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
I'll tell you what happened.
Oh, my God.
I went to get up to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who cornered me in the bathroom?
Charlie Sheen?
No.
Oh.
His wife. Or ex-wife at the
Which
time.
Which one?
Denise.
Brooke.
Yeah. And what did she say?
Well, I come walking out of my little stall, right?
Yes.
And I come swinging out of that stall, the door
like
swinging wide open like a saloon, right?
Yeah.
I'm coming out, going to wash my little paws. And somebody's asking her to take a picture. And then she glances over at me.
Yeah.
She grabs me by the arm.
Yeah.
And she says, "Hold on a second. Wait for me." And I was like, "What?" So she's finishing up a picture in the bathroom. And I'm standing. I'm like washing my hands going, "What does this woman want?" Why? First of all.
Why are you having to wait for her?
Yeah. And I don't even know who this is. I'm like, okay. I'm washing my hands. And then she comes over and she goes, "Are you into women?"
Oh.
And I said,
Yeah. Oh.
And she said, "Yeah, me too."
Oh.
And I was like, "Oh, okay." And then she said, "Let me give you my number."
Oh.
And I was like, okay. I was so confused. I was so, had no idea what was happening. And then I get her number. I mean, I was truly just like,
this is amazing. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
This is
I walk
amazing.
Out, and then my friend was waiting for me. My friend, who was one of the co-hosts on the Name That
the
Punky,
right.
He's waiting for me. And she walks out, and I tell my friend to come over to me. And I said, "That woman right there." And I told him the whole thing. And he goes, "That's Charlie Sheen's ex-wife." I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And then she comes up, and she's like, "Use my number."
Oh, wow.
So did you call her?
No.
Okay.
I no.
You
no.
should have called her.
No.
Why didn't you call her?
And when my friend, because my friend was like, "You have to call."
Yeah,
you have to call
of
her.
Of course.
And I said, "Listen, I have had my share of cuckoo birds over the years, and if this is Charlie Sheen's ex-wife, I do not want to sign myself up for cuckoo birds."
That's quite a way to try to pick somebody up. What kind of person that's your move is to be? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't imagine seeing somebody, in the bathroom going, "Wait for me 1 second." Like
oh
a total
God,
stranger.
Grab me by the arm. And say, wait for me.
Wait for me 1 second. And then you write down your phone number, go, you know, use it.
She must have really,
had a.
I mean,
she
must
have really caught
for
her
you.
I
and she was probably devastated that you never.
You
used
never
it.
Called. She sat
I
there.
Never called. She's still
she
waiting.
Ever thought of
Brooke
me
is still
again.
Waiting.
She's waiting.
She probably grabbed other people by the arm as she made her way back. Oh, and then I was sitting back at my table, and then the camera was panning to her because he went up at the end of the night, you know,
yeah.
And I guess at the end of the night is when they roast everybody else.
Oh, right.
So when he was doing that, the camera kept panning to her, and I was.
And you're like, she just came up to me in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So she grabbed me by the arm.
She grabbed me.
And,
wow. Tig.
Yeah, I know.
That's
listen,
amazing.
I can't go anywhere.
Hot Tig.
I've been trending on Twitter for being hot and sexy. I'll just have you know.
There's a hashtag.
By the way,
Tig started that says hot Tig.
I don't want to
disrespect
anyone.
I didn't start
the
hashtag.
But I can see. Look at how beautiful you both are.
Yeah,
like, I mean.
No.
Let's keep the attention on me.
I mean,
I thought
come
you were
on.
Gonna say
the one. Cheryl is not trending for being sexy AF.
I thought you were going to say for once. Let's keep the attention on our guest.
I mean.
No, on me.
Tig, I can understand it. I mean, again, like,
okay,
I'm trying
thank
to be
you.
Respectful.
Thank you. I know. Cheryl, you're a very nice person, but I'm the one trending.
Hashtag. I love it.
I'm in the
I
new movie,
it.
Army of the Dead.
Okay.
Please go to theater.
Listen, I think we need to wind it down.
What?
Why?
Why?
She just got here.
Well, People have, listen, our listeners have things to do. They're surgeons, they're vacuuming.
Very sad because I really am going to miss you. I don't want it to end.
Well, you can listen to the podcast.
I will.
And then we can be friends forever.
Can I get your, do you think that we should exchange numbers, all of us, afterwards?
Yes, of course.
Okay, I thought you were just going for my number. I was like,
I don't want your wife to get, you know.
Yeah, Stephanie. I don't either.
You don't want to make Stephanie mad.
I have so much respect for Stephanie.
She would be very upset.
So
probably.
She would probably be so mad.
She would probably care.
Soleil, let me ask you this.
Ask me anything, please.
And just so people know.
Yeah.
Two things that you should know about our listeners.
Now that they're gonna leave with Michael Jackson and Charlie Sheen.
Yes. A lot of them will never, they don't watch the films. Sometimes,
not always.
Some watch the film and then listen. And then sometimes they listen and then they go back and go, oh, I got to see that film. So just so people know that, I mean, you cover a lot of different themes and ideas in this documentary, and definitely your teen years and a lot of pain. There was a lot of loss that until you're older and you can step back and say, whoa, I went through that and my friends went through that and I didn't even realize what was happening at the time. I think a lot of people respond to that, you know. But do you ever feel like, oh, it's weird that I mean, going back to Punky Brewster, that I was like Punky Brewster when I was 8 years old, and you know, you had the eyeballs of the world on you then, and then you had to, you know, be a real person after that. Was that strange? Do you ever think, oh, I wish it was, you know, Punky Brewster when I was 30 and I had grown up a little?
No, I mean, I'm a big believer in life that our experiences happen for us and not to us. And I really am so grateful. Like I've had such a amazing life, and to be able to continue to do what I love. I really believe that this whole experience has been this coming of age of both the teen me and adult me, you know, coming together at the same time. And to be able to now feel like I was able to forgive that little girl that was feeling so many insecurities and shame and all those things that are wrapped up in some of our experiences when we, you know, think that we've put ourselves in certain situations that have led to that. And for the little girl me to ask the adult me, you know, who have you become? Have you made your life worthy? Are you living with purpose? My entire life has changed from this documentary. Completely.
Wow, that's so interesting. You know, I mean, why? Just because you've taken a step back and it gives you a chance to look in and analyze, or is it that now people are sort of seeing you again in the
for multiple reasons? You know, in that I always thought that aliveness and spark was associated with youth, you know? And when I started unlocking the tapes and the diaries, I rediscovered that part of me that for so many years, and I love my children and I love being a mother and I loved being a wife, I had really put that part of me, that artistic part of me, that spark that we talk about being ingrained in us from that early age, and had kind of put that away. And when I opened up the box, Pandora's box, I was never going to put that back. So it changed my relationship. It changed my marriage. It changed the way in which I communicated with my kids, to the point that now, you know, I've gone through this transformation. I call it transformation because divorce and separation feels like not something you experience.
That happened since the documentary?
Yeah.
Whoa. Is it because of the documentary?
I think what happened is we just, you know, I have so much love for him, and we just grew in different ways. And in me, it's almost like I became much more who I once was through the course of it. And it changed our interaction
dynamic
so much. And I think it was a big part of it, because I unlocked so much of myself that it was like the way that I looked at the world, you know, was so much through this new perspective, which was so interesting. And again, you know, we had grown so much, and yet we were growing in different ways, and I just have so much love for him and for our kids. But yeah, since the documentary, like, I mean, so much has evolved. It's
That's
wild.
Intense.
That is intense. And then what are you doing now? Because it seems like you should be directing films.
Thank you. Yeah. So very focused on directing, and then have had the most amazing time doing the continuation of Punky, which has been so much fun. And then the work that I'm really, next to my children, most proud of is the work that I get to do with CORE, which is the incredible nonprofit founded by Ann Lee and Sean Penn. And I have the incredible honor of working with them. And I've been working with Sean since the earthquake in Haiti, soon after the earthquake in Haiti. The March before, we've done over 2 million vaccinations and tested over 5.9 million people across the nation.
Wow.
For COVID-19. Wow. So CORE is really my heart and soul.
It's your passion.
And so much of my life.
And Sean produced this, right?
He was an EP on it, which is amazing. Uh-huh. He's such an incredible
executive producer. If anybody out there is listening,
Appy and Way, who have been so incredible as well, Leo's company, which... I'm the one that's like, oh, excuse me, let me pick
Leo.
Up that name. Let me pick
Leo's
up
Leo's company.
And who is Leo?
Leo. Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay, let's take a call.
I had lunch with Leo once.
Isn't he lovely?
He is quite lovely.
I love him. He's so sweet.
Oh, you know what?
He's
actually had dinner in a big group with Leo.
Come on.
I did. Well,
are we ready for our final thoughts?
Are we going to play Name That Punky?
I don't think we're ready for that.
Okay.
I don't. By the way, you must have gone through ebbs and flows in your life where you're like, please, not one person call me Punky today.
I've gone through a lot of ebbs and flows. I am being completely transparently honest when I say that I am so down that if anyone ever wants to call me Punky, they can come up and call me Punky. Like, that is how much I mean, I don't mean that in like a, I really do.
It's part
love
of
her
you.
So much. She's like, I feel
that's
like
that's so cute.
We all
that's
have that little sweet. Superhero inside of us. And I feel like she's my little superhero.
Because I'm sure you've hung out with other actors who people know them from whatever.
Yes.
You know, that one thing that put them on the map and they're like, yeah, boy.
Totally.
They think my name is really George Costanza.
And at the same time, I understand like that people can get, at the same time, that has been our choice.
Right.
When we decide to put ourselves out there to do what we do, I feel like it's our responsibility in a way to, you know, to like,
but I always feel
to answer to our TV names.
Well, I mean, or at least not to be bitter about it, like, you know what I mean, like grateful, right?
Yeah. About the poor actors that are known for like horrible, like, what's the name of the cute mean guy that was in The Shape of Water? You know that actor, Michael somebody, and he's kind of the mean, he always plays
take your
mean.
Time Cheryl keep trying to think of his name. It makes for a good show.
I understand
but you know, some people that people love to hate, imagine those guys.
That sucks.
Well, you're lucky because you're Cheryl on TV,
which is also confusing.
And not to mention, like, I mean, you're like the most, I mean, one of the most beloved people in the world. How do you feel about it? I mean,
Tig, are you listening to this?
You're beloved.
I love
sexy.
You.
I'll take sexy.
And you are so hot trending on Twitter. Yeah. And cannot wait to pull up the show. I find the show where you did it without the top on?
Oh, HBO.
Yeah. Okay,
okay.
Yeah.
Boyish Girl Interrupted is
boy.
The show.
Don't worry. She's about to plug it.
I'm so excited.
Okay. Tig, it's time for Happily Ever After Thoughts, where we give our final thoughts on this week's documentary. Did you cry, Tig?
I did not cry.
Sometimes we cry for ridiculous reasons during the films that we watch, but this time I kept it together.
Let me tell you the documentary that made Cheryl cry.
I want to know.
Hands on a Hard Body.
Oh,
do you know what that is?
Yeah, I love that documentary.
Okay, yes. Okay.
You get, totally. You get it. She gets it.
Okay, if I can mention that there's a documentary about me as well and follows me through all of my health struggles, Cheryl didn't shed a tear. But you put your hands on a pickup truck.
Because, by the way, this guy put his hands on the pickup truck for days. I mean, I'm talking about days.
Right. I went through 4 months.
His feet hurt. He was hungry. He was tired. And then he gave the truck to his wife.
I had my tits ripped off and tossed in a dumpster.
Then he gave the truck to his wife. That was like, I mean,
okay, so she's
not a
crying.
Dry eye in the house.
She's crying. Okay, and the other question we ask at the end of every show, Cheryl, go ahead, ask it.
Soleil, who were you attracted to in this film?
That's our final question.
That's how we end
every episode. Who were you attracted to?
Everyone. Oh. Wow, we've never had that answer.
Did you have a lot of flings with a lot of people in that?
Did I hook up? Are you asking if I hooked up with any of the interview subjects when I was younger?
Mm. That's what I'm asking. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that was a quick, yes.
Who were you most attracted to out of all of those people?
When I was younger? Mm-hmm. Oh, I couldn't name one because, I mean, you know, when I think back, so Brian has always been such an important, pivotal part
of
my life.
Brian Austin Green? Is
yeah,
that you're talking
so
about?
Yeah, sweet.
Okay. He seems so, I mean, every time I see him, he seems so fun and
he
nice.
He would pull up, he would pick me up from school and his like Bronco.
And you made out with him? You made out with him?
When we were younger, we made out.
Cheryl, I just want clarity.
She's blushing and just talking about it.
And then let's see. And then Danny, we did kiss once.
Danny, you made up with Mario Lopez
once when I was doing Saved by the Bell.
Oh. Okay.
But I also kissed Mark Paul. This is, you're getting all the juice. Wow. A different time though, when I was younger, because he did Punky. I'm way oversharing here.
Whoa.
I forgot this is going out to the world.
So when you were like 11 or something?
I mean, yeah, it was like cute, like innocent little kiss.
Cheryl, who were you attracted to?
I always think that I always think that Mario Lopez is cute. Like, if I was in an elevator with a group of people, and the world
you and your elevators. Why does every makeout take place in an elevator?
I'm just telling you. And you didn't know if you were going to, you know, live after the
Cheryl,
next.
Cheryl, this is the weirdest thing.
Out of all the guys in the dock, that would be the one you'd pick.
That's it?
I love that. By the way, I love Mario. I think that's so amazing.
Right. He's adorable. I taught him how to play poker, by the way. He'll tell you that.
You did?
Yeah, he will tell you that, too.
Does he know that you got a thing for him?
No, I don't.
Well, now he does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everyone's listening to this show.
Oh, by the way, we've totally left out Mark Wahlberg, who also was super dreamy at the time,
I did a movie with Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, shoot.
People used to think I looked like Mark Wahlberg.
And now they think you look like Tom Cruise.
Right.
Who were you attracted to?
I was attracted to Brian Austin Green.
He is cute, too.
Sweet. He is the cutest, and he does seem like the nicest man alive.
Not nicer than Mario Lopez, I'm sorry.
Nicer. Wait,
he's
like,
he's
like
so sweet,
the most
right?
authentic,
he
sweetest,
he's very
cutest.
Sweet. He is very sweet.
And he's single?
I think he has a girlfriend. He's so sweet, though. I mean, he's been like he's been such a dear friend of mine. Are you talking about Tig's interested?
Yeah, I'm asking. Tig seems so
curious. I'm just wondering, you know.
Just line it up in case things go south.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked you. We liked your group of people that you hung out with.
They're fun.
Mm-hmm. I hate to say that this is really it.
It's the end of the show.
Soleil, do you have anything you'd like to plug? Let's just focus on Soleil this week, Tig.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having me, and this has been truly such a joy.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do our show.
And then, yes, you can stream Punky Brewster right now on Peacock TV, and you can stream Kid 90 right now on Hulu. And you can learn about the incredible work we're doing with CORE and CORE Response right now, and get involved if people want to volunteer, if they want to donate. I'm really so proud of the work that we're doing. And
that's amazing.
That's awesome.
All right, well, thank you so much. That was so, so fun.
I just wanted to promote something.
No, we don't. We're out of time.
I have a book.
We're out of time.
Netflix
but,
specials.
Thank you so much.
I have an HBO special. New HBO special coming out.
We'll have time later to talk about it.
24th.
Okay.
I have my Amazon TV series, One Mississippi.
Okay. I'm on a show called Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO. And I think it's on HBO Max.
I have an online series called Under a Rock with Tig Notaro.
All right.
I'm also on Star Trek Discovery.
Okay. Should we talk about what we're...
I also have another podcast called Don't Ask Tig.
You guys join us next week when we talk about the documentary Tickled.
Soleil, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was so incredible having you. So great talking to you.
You are just an inspiration, and I'm so grateful, you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
I really am so thankful.
Thank you. All right, well, we'll see you out and about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we will see you out and about. So
yes. I can't wait.
Don't give my number to Brooke.
Oh, that's our new tagline. And don't give my number to Brooke.
And don't give my number to Brooke.
All right.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Bye, you guys.
Bye.
Cheryl, should we do this again?
Yeah, let's do it again. Tig and Cheryl True Story is hosted by me, Cheryl Hines, and Tig Notaro. It's produced by Gabby Kovacic and Thomas Willett, audio engineered and edited by Thomas Willett, with music by David Sussin. Special thanks to Patrick McDonald and Stephanie Allen. Follow us on social media for updates and review and rate True Story on Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate it. You can email us at tigandcherylTrueStory@gmail.com. That was a HeadGum Podcast.